Before we get to this week's episode, this is just a reminder that if you sign up to my email list by going to go.nonmonogamyhelp.com/email, you do automatically get sent a coupon code that you can use for The Anxious Person's Guide to Non-Monogamy on the Jessica Kingsley Publishers website. And they do ship to North America and to Europe, as far as I know, also all around the world, but do feel free to join the email list and get that coupon in case you want to get the book, but you want to get a little bit of money off. All right, this is this week's episode.
Non-Monogamy Help is a podcast where your questions about open, non-monogamous, or polyamorous relationships are answered. Our host, Lola Phoenix, will consult a licensed therapist with over a decade of experience to address your problems. Names and locations have been changed or censored to keep your questions anonymous. You're listening to Non-Monogamy Help, the podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 108 of the Non-Monogamy Help podcast. I'm Lola Phoenix. Please send your questions to ask@nonmonogamyhelp.com, and they'll either be read in the podcast or the column anonymously. You're more than welcome to let me know which you'd prefer. You can get all the columns in the podcast at nonmonogamyhelp.com. If you would like to get them in your inbox, because maybe you missed them on the website or you can't always remember, you can subscribe to the email newsletter by going to go.nonmonogamyhelp.com/email, and you can follow the podcast and the column on Twitter and Instagram at nonmonogamyhelp. All right. If you want to support the columns in the podcast, please consider becoming a patron. That would be super helpful. Like, even $1 a month helps support the daily running of the column and the podcast. And it just shows me a general vote of support. It's just a nice thing. You can do that by going to patreon.com/LolaPhoenix. And if you give $5 or more a month, your name, with your permission, will be read at the end of the podcast. All right, let's get to this week's discussion question. If this is the first episode you're hearing, every week I read a discussion question that you can use with your friends, partners, metamors, anyone that you want to get to know better. And I also answer it myself for you briefly to give you a little bit of context. This week's discussion question is, what do you think is the most important thing for children to have? And this may not be a relevant discussion question for you if you have no interest, but I think that it's an interesting question for people who are considering having kids. And also, it's just something that I've been thinking about because I have been consuming a little bit of parenting stuff on TikTok, and I think it's actually quite healing for me, especially given the background that I've had. It's kind of nice to see, like, the different ways that one could handle situations and learning more about the brain and how it develops. There's one account in particular that I definitely recommend for everybody. It's called Whole Parent, W-H-O-L-E Parent on TikTok. I would definitely recommend that. John is a parenting educator. He also has a really good newsletter. It's about kind of like how the brain develops, like brain-based parenting techniques. And I think that what's most important for children to have is consistency and compassion and love and just having a place where they know they're always going to be accepted and loved and cared for. I think that that's the most important thing. That's what I gather from some of the information that I've learned. And yeah, I think it's actually, even if you don't plan on having kids, even if you have like no interest in having kids, if you had like a rough background or rough upbringing and you struggle with self-compassion, I actually think that consuming parenting content is really helpful and helps you with reparenting yourself in a really weird way. But I guess it's not that weird. But I would definitely recommend checking it out and just seeing like how you would do things differently a little bit with yourself. Or then you might be able to understand like, oh wow, my brain didn't develop then, but it's developed now and I can change things. So yeah, definitely check that out. The discussion question again is, what do you think is the most important thing for a child to have or children to have? Let's get to this week's letter. I just discovered your podcast while searching for a better understanding of non-monogamy / open relationships. I wanted to reach out because my girlfriend and I have been dating for 7 months and things have been incredible. We're very good at communicating and being transparent no matter how hard the topic may be. We feel that we are fully committed to each other and devoted to growing individually and together. We are both bisexual and have had serious discussions about what our future may look like. We both want kids but think it's very important for children to have adult role models from each energy field, feminine and masculine, which we would be missing a masculine energy if we were to have kids together. We talked about the possibility of bringing a man into our relationship to be a father to our kids and possibly being a throuple. She has been in a non-monogamous relationship before and I have not. I'm a little unsure how to feel about a more taboo looking relationship between three people, but I am open to trying. My girlfriend recently met up with this man she briefly knows and has a connection with, and they discuss relationship possibilities as well as views on life. She told me they have a very similar past and personality traits. She was very open and honest with me in admitting that she may have feelings for him and is interested in possibly exploring those feelings. She said he seems to have the qualities she would want in a father, man, and male partner. I found myself becoming jealous and scared to lose her to him. She assured me that she is not going anywhere and our relationship is very strong and her love will not change for me. My head is spinning with possibility, fear, excitement, and confusion. The things that worry me most is jealousy arising, explaining the relationship dynamic to family and friends, and overall just drama that may arise. I'm wondering if you have any advice or suggestions on how to navigate this relationship. Before we get to this week's answer, we have a quick advertisement from BetterHelp. Quite often, a lot in my columns and my podcasts, I encourage people to seek a polyamory-friendly therapist or a therapist who has some understanding of polyamory. And for a lot of people, that's not really easy to find locally. So if you're looking for a place where you can find therapists online, you can send messages to at any time of the day, and they do offer a little bit of financial aid. If you can look it up, you can get 10% off your first month by going to betterhelp.com/nonmonogamyhelp or using the promo code nonmonogamyhelp at checkout. Let's get to this week's answer. I find this a really interesting question to ask me in particular because I'm non-binary and I'm agender. So I don't really feel like I have feminine or masculine energy. And I'm gonna respect the fact that you believe in that, but I'm gonna also challenge you a little bit on that. Like, ask yourself if you can define what feminine or masculine energy is without using gendered stereotypes. Because what is masculine energy? Is it someone who takes charge? Why is that not feminine energy? Is it someone who is decisive? Maybe a little bit aggressive. Can that also not be feminine energy? Like, what is the definition of the two? And what if you meet someone who doesn't feel like they have either of those things? So I'm gonna question that. I do think it's important for children to have a variety of role models and to see themselves reflected in some way in media or the adults around them. I definitely think that this is something that a lot of people don't take very seriously. And it sometimes is a lot of reasons why queer kids in very straight homes can feel alone, why sometimes transracial children who are adopted by white families who are disconnected from their cultures can feel alone. And it is a really important thing. I think that if you were to have a child who identified as a boy, as a man, as a male, whatnot, and I don't think it would be that bad if he didn't that, but I also feel like I can understand that it might be important to find some people who are similar to him who can be role models. But there's a lot of assumptions that you're making here. Firstly, is that men are the only ones with masculine energy, and maybe you aren't making that assumption. It just happened to be that your partner met a man, and so there you go. But why can't anyone have masculine energy? And do you not feel like, I don't know, it depends on how you define masculine energy and what that even means. Like, is there absolutely no percentage of yourself and your partner that is in any way masculine? Like, and what is it that you're hoping that your child is going to get from masculine energy? And why do you feel as though you're not able to provide that? I think another assumption that you're making is that you must be in a relationship, a romantic or sexual relationship with someone for them to be a role model or involved in your child's life, which isn't true. I have had not so great examples of, I guess, what you would call masculine energy growing up, but one of the most stable and positive examples of men in my life was a best friend that my mom had who was a gay man, who by some 50s era definitions may have not been very masculine, but was a great role model for me and a good person who taught me that not all men were bad in my life. So again, there's the assumption that a man is going to provide you with masculine energy and that, you know, just think about that. That's all I'm saying. And then I think that the other assumption here that I really want to challenge is, again, like this idea that a role model has to do with masculinity and femininity and not with the inherent traits within that person, because you could end up with a dude and he's not a good role model at all, even if he has quote unquote masculine. I just feel like this needs more picking apart. For me personally, I just feel like there's a lot of assumptions being made about masculinity and femininity and what they do and don't provide. And yeah, I just think that you need to unpack that a little bit more. Maybe it's just the fact that I'm agender and I don't get these concepts on a personal level. I get the idea that like children can do better and in an environment where they can identify with the adults that surround them and where they have something in common and where they feel that as though they identify with a concept and maybe they do identify with masculinity or femininity, and that's fine. And it is better for them to have an example of a positive aspect of that rather than a negative. I totally agree with that. I totally think that that's very valid. But that person doesn't have to be a person that you date. You know, it takes a village to raise a child, and there can be people who are super involved in your child's life who aren't necessarily people that they date or people that you date. So yeah, there's just a lot around that that I think you might want to unpack and think about, just because yeah, having a man there doesn't necessarily mean anything. Lots and lots of people, if you watch as much true crime as I have, lots of people have masculine energies in their life and don't turn out so well. You know, like lots of people have feminine energies in their life and don't turn out so well. So I think that there's a little bit more there that needs to kind of be explored. I wouldn't decide on what kind of relationship structure you're going to have based off of the idea that your future child needs a man in the house. I mean, that sounds a little sus, I'm just gonna say. Like, just unpack this. And I say that as well because I feel like there's a lot of, like, internalized biphobia and misogyny going on here. And it's not to say that, like, either of you were actively, like, ignorant or biased or in any way, but, like, your jealousy actually makes sense within this kind of context. If you're operating in a context of masculine and feminine energies, and you would be understandably a little bit kind of not put off, but like threatened by your partner dating a man, because a lot of queer people, when they're in queer relationships and there is this kind of like, you know, a possibility of their partner being able to access a quote unquote normal relationship or a relationship that is more accepted in society. And the fact that you've mentioned you're concerned about the taboo aspect of being in a throuple, it makes me think that you kind of have a lot in going on with the idea of like how people view you, what people see, and it makes sense that you would be, right? Like you were raised in a society that told you that heterosexuality is like the thing that you should be, that being monogamous is the thing that you should be. And it makes sense to have a little bit of fear that your partner may choose, you know, a man over you, because that is what society is telling you. Also, as well as like internalized biphobia and homophobia, also misogyny, like the idea, you know, when you look at biphobia, when you look at bisexuality, right, the assumption generally tends to be, like, people don't take bisexuality seriously, but the assumption always tends to be that the relationship with a man is more preferable, right? So like if there's a bisexual man, people are like, oh, well, you're just gay. You're actually just gay. Like nobody takes the bisexuality of that man very seriously. And then when it's a woman who's bisexual, like, oh, actually, you're just straight. So when it comes down to it, no matter who is bisexual, it tends to be like, oh, you really just want to be with a man. Like, and it's kind of this misogyny added as a layer on top of it, that a relationship with a woman is not that serious. And so there is a lot of kind of internalized biphobia and like internalized, you know, misogyny that people go through in queer relationships, where it's like, okay, this isn't as serious for you as being with a man. And a lot of experiences that bisexual women have dating lesbians or other queer people, and that their bisexuality isn't taken seriously if they've dated a man, or there's this fear that you're just going to go back to men. I had this like internalized biphobia super intensely, even as an agender person, as a non-binary person. I'm like, oh, well, you know, I'm not, I'm just pretending. I secretly, you know, everybody kind of has that. So it makes kind of sense that you have that. And I just kind of feel like maybe there might be a little bit of a connection there with the assumption and like the fears. And these are understandable fears. And I'm not saying that you're like a secret misogynist for having them or anything like that. But what I'm saying is that it makes sense that you would fear both the idea that like she's going to go to the guy and like prefer him over you, and also that you're scared of being judged because you're already kind of being judged in a way, right? Like, it makes sense. But I think that what you kind of need to do, because what a lot of people do in these situations is that they're afraid of, you said you're afraid of the drama, right? You're afraid of emotions. You're afraid of things coming up. The thing is that no matter what path you choose, even if you break up with both of them and you decide to like be a like married heterosexual woman in a Leave It to Beaver kind of like house and picket fence, that doesn't mean your life is going to be drama free. Like, there is no, just kind of accept the fact that there is no life free of conflict. There is nothing constant but change. There isn't any path that you choose that's necessarily going to be some sort of magical path that will have the balance of all the energies and therefore forever bring you peace. Like, unfortunately, there is conflict in life. There is drama. There is emotions. There is ups and downs. And if you look at almost every kind of advice when it comes to wisdom, older wisdom, and even therapy, and so much of what makes things tolerable is letting go of the idea that you can control everything and accepting the fact that you can't control for all the variables. And this is something that I explore in my 101 and 102 articles. If you go to nonmonogamyhelp.com/101 or 102, I explore them in my 101 and 102s, and I also explore them in my book, The Anxious Person's Guide to Nonmonogamy. But the point that I'm trying to make is that you're not going to be able to prevent conflict from arising. You're not going to be able to prevent yourself from feeling jealousy. You're not going to be able to prevent yourself from having big emotions. And what a lot of people do, not just in non-monogamy, but in life in general, when they're faced with the idea of having to go through these emotions, is they try to stop themselves from experiencing them, either by disassociation, by addiction, by any means necessary, just creating all these rules like we're going to do this and this and this to try and prevent themselves from feeling negative emotions. And I kind of sense that that's a little bit of what you want to do. Understandably, most people, you're not going to, I'm going to volunteer to be unhappy. Like, nobody wants to do that. But the thing of it is that while you can't prevent yourself from experiencing conflict, experiencing quote unquote drama, what you can predict and stand by is your own faith in yourself and your own ability to regulate yourself. If you learn how to emotionally regulate yourself, then, you know, learning how to regulate your nervous system is not about your nervous system always being in a state of calm. It's not about always being level and never experiencing any highs or lows. It's about how do you bring yourself back down from that. And that's kind of what I go through in my 101 and 102 articles. It's like, accept that you're going to be afraid. Accept that you're going to be jealous. Accept that things are going to be hard. Instead of putting on the rose-tinted glasses, which I feel like is what most polyamorous advice kind of tells you to do, is just sort of like paste over the bad feelings by going, I'm the best and I'm the best person and my partner really loves me, which is not, self-affirming talk can work. But I do feel like if you haven't learned how to balance your own nervous system, which a lot of people don't actually know how to do, and it's not really their fault, because I feel like we're kind of living in a society that constantly aggravates our nervous system. But if your nervous system is constantly kind of going up and down, and you're in fight and flight, and you can't get out of it, none of this self-affirming talk is going to work for very much longer. Like, that's not necessarily, there is an aspect of self-compassion that's important for balancing your nervous system, but it's not just that. And so I think that it's about learning that, yes, these things are going to happen, and how am I going to cope with them? Do I have confidence in myself in my ability to cope with them? And I think that is what you will find if you kind of go through the articles that I mentioned and kind of work through, like, okay, accept that you're going to have jealousy, accept that you're going to have ups and downs. If you decide to go into this throuple, accept that some people are not going to be thrilled about it. Some of your family won't be thrilled about it. People will be judgmental. People will make comments. People will make assumptions. There isn't anything you can do to control that. So it's about accepting that and figuring out how you're going to deal with that. I also think that accepting the fact that jealousy is going to arise is like a big thing that I would advise every single person to do. Even if you haven't experienced that much jealousy so far in the relationship that you've had, I think accepting the fact that you are going to be jealous, that you're going to be afraid, and quite often, to be honest with you, when you read the 101 and 102 articles, you'll see, but I feel like there's a big kind of trend within a lot of polyamorous people to label any negative feeling they have as jealousy, when sometimes it's just being afraid of losing your partner, and I disagree that those two are the same. So you're going to have negative emotions, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you're not polyamorous or that you can't hack it. It's just like a normal response to choosing a relationship structure which is not common and you have no social models for and you don't really have the same social support for. It makes sense that you're going to experience big emotions because it's a big thing. So accept that that's going to happen instead of trying to prevent jealousy from arising, preventing family and friends from judging you, which you can't prevent drama. You can't prevent those things. You can't. There's nothing that you can do to prevent those things. So accept that there may be ups and downs and learn how to trust in your own personal ability to regulate your emotions. If you can't regulate your emotions, you can learn how to regulate them. Trust in your own ability to actually handle things. One of the things I put in my book is something that someone once told me, which I really, really appreciated, a kind of insight into anxiety, because I've had anxiety pretty much my whole life and am much, much better now. But one of the things that they said was that anxiety isn't actually about the thing that you're anxious about. You're not actually anxious. Like, for example, if you're like me and you have like super health anxiety and you're constantly worried that you have some type of terminal thing, you're not actually anxious about that. You're anxious about the fact that you believe you can't handle it. Like, you're anxious about your ability to cope with it. That's actually what's driving the anxiety. It's not any of the myriad of things that you could be anxious about. It's the fact that there isn't a confidence in yourself to be able to cope with it. And actually, there are so many things that could go wrong in life. There's so many things that can change. You're never going to be in a situation, regardless of how safe you feel, where you're not at risk of something happening. Anything can happen. The only thing that is really constant in life is your own ability to take care of yourself. And if you don't feel like you can take care of yourself, then you're going to try to control the situation around you to protect yourself instead of doing the work internally. And that is a thing that a lot of people do, which makes a lot of sense. But there is a little bit of that in here of like you trying to control the situation around you. And I feel like this is also extended in the fact of like the idea of you're going to be able to be a good parent or like create an environment that's perfect for a child simply by choosing the energies that are around that child, when it's vastly more complicated than that. And I would definitely encourage you to kind of break down those things. So yeah, to sum up, it's an interesting question to put forth to an agender person. But my perception of this is that you might want to question some of the assumptions you're making about feminine and masculine energies, what those things mean. Try to kind of pull apart what you think feminine and masculine energy is and sort of be a little self-critical about it. Examine how your own culture has impacted what you believe feminine and masculine energy is. It might be worth you actually reading Delusions of Gender by Cordelia Fine. I would definitely recommend you checking that out. It might be worth you looking at history and what feminine and masculine means and what it and how it's vastly changed throughout time. Because I think that once you start seeing the feminine and masculine, you know, there are definitely things people can identify with, and that's absolutely fine. But there are things that are constructed within cultures. And like I said, examine some of the assumptions that men are the ones that provide masculine energy And maybe you aren't assuming that. Maybe just, like I said, that it's your partner just met a man and you're like, oh, boom, masculine energy. But like, examine these kind of assumptions and what they mean to you. And then I think also you might want to look at the way that kind of like your internalized, you know, homophobia, biphobia, misogyny, like these assumptions are internalized, and that's fine. And you're not a bad person for having that. But except that you may feel a little bit more threatened by a guy because of the society that's been around you that's validated heterosexual relationships in a way that it hasn't really validated homosexual relationships yet. I'm sorry to use the homosexual word, but yeah. And then last but not least, I think that it's worth like going through my 101 and 102 articles, maybe going through my book and thinking about, instead of approaching the situation of, oh, there's all this horrible stuff that might happen and I want to prevent that, accept the fact that you're going to have jealousy, you're going to have negative feelings, drama, quote unquote, will happen, and think about how you're going to deal with that and support yourself through that and support your partners through that. And accept the fact that if you do enter into a throuple, people may be judgmental of that, but people may be judgmental regardless of what you do. But just accept that these things are things that can happen. And there isn't necessarily anything that you can do to absolutely and totally, you know, inoculate yourself from these things or protect yourself from these things, that these things are just part of the ups and downs of life. And figure out how you're going to support yourself through that rather than just trying to prevent everything from happening. So I hope that helps, and good luck. Thank you for listening to episode 108 of the Non-Monogamy Help Podcast. If you want to be awesome, you can donate to my Patreon. Donating $5 or more a month means that I will read your name at the end of the podcast. If you say that you want that to happen, I'm not just going to assume, because I don't know, you may have a different name on there, you may not want it, you may feel a little bit shy, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, this week's current patrons are Laura Boylan, Chris Albury Jones, Duke Ellen Robertson, Nikki Jones, James Wartell, Leo Yaki, and Tyler Tikno. And I'm hoping I said that right, and I'm so sorry. If for whatever reason you can't become a patron, because I totally get it, not everybody has money that they can do every month, that's absolutely fine. One thing that you can do, find the podcast on iTunes or Spotify or anywhere where you can rate it and review it. And then let me know. Tag me on Instagram or Twitter. Sometimes with Instagram, they have 5 different ways of like message filtering. I don't even know. It's just weird. But if you don't catch me, like tag me in something and let me know. And I'll say thank you, because I really appreciate it. Sometimes these reviews, like, you know, when I think like, oh, what am I doing? Why am I doing this podcast? No one's listening to me. Blah. It's helpful to kind of read stuff. I really appreciate. And if you've ever left me a comment, sent me an email, or said anything kind about my book or about my podcast or column, I really, really appreciate it. So yeah, that's all for this week. You'll get a new column next Friday and another podcast episode in a fortnight. Thank you again for listening. You've been listening to Non-Monogamy Help. Our podcast music has been provided by Chris Albury Jones at albury-jones.com, and the art was made by Dom Jung at domduong.com. Thank you for listening.